after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. It's Smith and Jones back for another day. And Jonesy, I need a loan, and I'm going to Patrick Mahomes for some cash. The amount of money, and it came out yesterday as we were on the air, and it certainly is still a story 24 hours later. The amount of money that this guy is set to make, and what shocks me more than anything, and hey, more power to him, sign the deal. I mean, I'm not criticizing this at all. I think it's incredible. I'm shocked that the Chiefs, as good as Mahomes is, were willing to hand out that amount of cash for a quarterback, because we know injuries in football and the longevity or the sustainability of a career and the relatively short career for so many players in football, especially at the running back, quarterback positions. It is incredible to me the amount of money that he got and the amount of money that he got guaranteed. So more power to him as, you know, one of the greatest young players in sports, not just in the NFL, is backing up that Brinks truck for the next decade.
Eric, it's kind of crazy because the NFL is not one for giving. I mean, they're CBA. There's no guaranteed contract. So it's all in, you know, the money that's guaranteed because they can cut you at any time. And he's done a great job. I mean, he's set. He really, really is. And, you know, you just hope he doesn't get injured. But he sure capitalized on his star and his ability. And, I mean, it was mind-boggling to look at it and say, with the incentives, this thing could be over $500 million. And it's 10 years. I mean, I know he's young and Tom Brady's still playing into his 40s, but, you know, the NFL's a tricky game. I mean, you know, an injury, a freak injury, any injury can end your career, can take you out, can just make you a different player. So good for Patrick Mahomes for capitalizing. You know, I ran into him. We were both at the All-Star Weekend in Chicago, mm-hmm. the NBA All-Star Weekend. And I was rounding the corner in my hotel, heading for an Uber to try to get to the arena. And there was this unassuming, biracial-looking kid with curly hair there. And I kind of turned the corner and looked. I said, "Patrick Mahomes?" And he gave a thumb up. And it's like, I couldn't stop the chat. My Uber was there, and I was going to be late for our event. But good for him. It really is. Good for him for capitalizing. And Eric, this just goes to show, if they can pay, the owners can pay one guy that much money, my question is, how much are they making?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I find interesting about this as well, though, Jonesy, is not just what you bring up in terms of what are they making and how much are they making if they can pay this guy this amount of money, but how much is the current pandemic factoring into, or not, decisions that relate to not just this coming season, next season, and a couple of seasons from now, but the next decade? Because I understand that we all are sitting here thinking, assuming, hoping that a virus will eventually go away, a cure will be found, a vaccine will be created, this won't be with us or won't be part of our lives either 12 months from now or, dare I say, 18, 24 months from now. But when we talk about the finances, we're sitting here listening, at least in our circles primarily, but it certainly affects the NHL, Major League Baseball, the NFL, and MLS and more. We're hearing about the hundreds of millions and potentially billions of dollars being lost by the NBA. The Orlando bubble costing the NBA over $150 million in itself. I don't understand, with no tickets being sold, with likely, you would assume, merchandise probably going down, concession sales going down, playoff revenue not there, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on for all these respective sports. Franchises are going to be losing a boatload of money for the better part of the next year or two or more. And there might be still apprehension from a lot of people even attending events once fans are allowed until folks feel comfortable doing so. So how is this going to affect a team like the Chiefs or so many others paying just regular contracts that are owed to players, let alone contracts that are worth $500 million over the course of the next decade?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're the owner – or you're the NFL, and we saw the term come into play with the NBA potentially this year when they talk about force majeure. If it's an act of God, mm-hmm. that can get them off the hook from a contract. Like they almost got out of it here this year, the NBA with that, but they were able to work something out because the players wanted to play and obviously get paid. But Eric, I'm with you. I don't think you can look too far down the line in terms of the sporting landscape. Like, we keep talking about this year and the bubble, and you bring up a good point. What about next year? Like, next year at this time, where will we be? Will we be getting set to, go back into an arena to do games? Will we, will we be hearing that, we might look at January? Are there going to be partial crowds? Like, how do you do it? This thing is just so up in the air right now. It begs questions about what we're going to do going forward, even with what we know right now. And things keep changing so rapidly. So, as you said, the sporting landscape, like, he's got a 10-year contract with guaranteed money. Good for him. Grab it now, because you just never know what's going to happen in 3-4 years, where we're going to be or where the economy is going to be. I mean, look at the NBA losing money with the salary cap and where they're going to be. And all of a sudden, new CBAs are going to have to be hammered out. Old deals will be closed because of loopholes and contracts that say you can open it up. It's a really, really tenuous and uncertain time right now.
Yeah, I continue to come back, and you've heard me say this a few times in conversations we've had with various guests, and Elliot Friedman's going to come up in a couple of minutes and join us, and I'll probably ask him a similar type question as it relates to the NHL. We're all operating under the assumption, Jonesy, or under the theory or the thought that, okay, we're dealing with the now, and I understand living in the moment and not getting too far ahead of ourselves, pro or con, but as much as we're focusing in all these major sports about the Orlando bubble, baseball's return to play, the NHL, Edmonton and Toronto and hub cities and a new CBA and all this stuff, what about next year? Because next year is not that far away. And next year, technically, based on the calendar, is still in this year, in 2020, unless, of course, the NBA and the NHL and others push their season into the 2021 calendar. But do we even have a vaccine by then? What does the return to play look like? Are we looking at playing an entire NBA season in a bubble or in the NHL in hub cities? Or are we going to see travel across the border and into various markets? Might the NBA and the NHL adapt or adopt a style similar to baseball where it's regionalized, so there still is travel, but it's just not as much travel, and it's to only markets within sort of a geographical range? There's so much to work out still. And, oh yeah, by the way, probably not played in front of fans. So a lot of money is going to be lost. And yet there are still tens of, let alone hundreds of, millions of dollars still owed to individuals, let alone to rosters, when we look at them as a complete unit. Pro sports has got a lot of harsh realities coming real fast at them if it hasn't hit them already. And if this thing isn't, clear, when I say this thing being the virus, the pandemic, in 6-12 months, there's going to be some real issues across the four majors, let alone sports in general globally.
Yeah, and Eric, and I think that's why sporting leagues are treading carefully. They're trying to mm-hmm. be cautious and go slow. I mean, the worst thing would be to restart and overlook things and have to shut it down again. I think everybody's going to be watching what happens in the NBA very, very closely. And, I heard the clip of Quentin Richardson, and here's an NBA guy. I hope all those guys take it seriously, because there's a lot at stake. There's a lot at stake for them, their families, the industry, the economy, all of it. And it's teetering right now. So I just don't know where we're going to be, Eric. I'd love to think that we could go back to what we used to call normal. You and I sitting on a plane, going to dinner in a hotel, meeting fans before a game, and, having packed houses and the energy of the arena. But I don't know when I see that happening again. I'm trusting the science more than anything else. And mm-hmm. I think it could be a while.
Again, Elliot Friedman's going to join us in a couple of minutes' time, and later on in this hour, speaking of the NBA and Jonesy referencing Quentin Richardson. Richardson was on Good Show, and he was talking, of course, about his podcast that he's got with Darius Miles. But we are going to talk to Jameer Nelson, another former NBA player who's starting up his own podcast, and we'll talk to him about the advent of that podcast and why he wanted to use that platform, and also just kind of pick his brain on his thoughts on the NBA's return to play, the bubble, etc., and what he thinks could ultimately go down over the 2-3 months for various teams in that bubble down in Orlando at Disney World. And more news out of the NBA as it relates to players not taking part in the resumption of play. Spencer Dinwiddie from the Brooklyn Nets will not take part. Another positive test for COVID-19 for Dinwiddie, so he still has not cleared himself of the virus. And then Bradley Beal, I think for a number of reasons, probably, Jonesy, but the one primary one being listed or being mentioned is that the rotator cuff injury that he's dealing with is going to keep him out of play for the Washington Wizards. So that's two teams towards the bottom tier that you would assume would have a potential impact on a Toronto Raptors first-round opponent, especially if the Raptors maintain that second seed in the East.
Yeah. I think guys, I wouldn't say they're using the current pandemic as an excuse, but it's a consideration for some of these guys that are deciding not to play. I mean, some guys, Avery Bradley not wanting to play because he's got a son with a pre-existing condition. And while you would say, well, you would play normally, well, this isn't normal. Yeah. If he gets sick and brings that home to that kid, you put him at risk. So he opts out. So, and there were a few of those guys, like, not wanting to play because there may be further consequences. And, you think about a sport like basketball, and you think about a sport like hockey where guys are in close proximity. Not that, there isn't risk in golf or baseball, but, certainly hockey, football, basketball, guys are right on top of each other. There's physical contact, and that's where you would worry. You and I talk about it all the time. Amazed that nobody on the Raptors tested positive after playing against Utah in that last game before it got shut down. You and I remember we were calling the game. There was a dust up at the end of the game.
Yep.
And that in itself, could have been grounds, or could have been a breeding ground for the virus to be transferred.
Joining us on the line right now as we shift our attention away from the NBA, we'll bring it back to basketball with Jameer Nelson at the bottom of the hour. But the National Hockey League yesterday announcing a tentative agreement on return to play. Their plan will take effect of pending ratification July 13th, so a week from now, less than a week from now, with the start of formal training camps and then traveling to hub cities on the 26th, with the start of the qualifying round being August 1st. So it's coming fast and furious for the NHL. Talk more about it. From Hockey Night in Canada, from Sportsnet, Elliot Friedman. Elliot, appreciate the time today.
My pleasure, guys. I was just listening to you and you and Jonesy there just talking about that last game against Utah for the Raptors. Like, doesn't that seem like 100 years ago?
Yes. Yeah. Elliot, yeah. I joke all the time with Jonesy. Somebody asked me the other day, I think it was late June, what's the date today? And I said June 29th or whatever the hell the date was. And they said, no, it's like March 97th. Because it just seems like it's a continuation of a grinding month of March. There has been no new day, no new week, no new month. It's just a long grind of 4 months that we've all been in.
I know. Seriously, I don't even know what day it is. I don't know what the date is. Now, as you said, we kind of got to know what the date is, because, it's getting closer, hopefully, and hopefully that things, there aren't outbreaks in some of these camps. I've been watching the NBA, seven teams have had to close temporarily. In the NHL, we've already had two. And, you're sitting there and you're going, boy, it's the one thing I look at the NHL right now is that everybody says that they believe if they get into the hubs, things are going to be okay. But it's that 2 weeks now where we have before, where there's one training camp in Texas, there's two in Florida, there's one in Arizona, and you're sitting there and saying, boy, I hope we get through this unscathed so we can have some hockey. But I know people are nervous because this thing is so it's just so out there in certain areas, and we're still learning about how it transmits and what the potential dangers are to the human body. I mean, it's a wild time. On one hand, I'm really excited about the possibility of all these sports coming back. Like, I watched that. I was looking at that NBA schedule, and you got Raptors Lakers on the second night, and I'm really excited to hear what the NHL schedule is going to be. But on the other hand, I'm nervous. It's like I want to get excited, but I'm also realistic at the same time. It's kind of a funny pattern of emotions.
Elliot, talk to me about what the NHL has in place. I know the NBA's got their stuff in place, but do you see any pitfalls with, we're talking about a hub city. As soon as people come in, all bets are off. That I don't care what you say. And I mean, looking at the precautions and the plans, I'm sure they've tried to account for anything, but is there stuff in there that we can't see? Are there pitfalls that, I mean, a hub city, that now you're going to have, it's not like, I mean, Orlando's a bubble. You're going to have them all in there. It's kind of confined. What are some of the conditions around a hub city for the NHL that is going to insulate them from potential transmission?
Well, I think that, Jonesy, I think that one thing we're seeing is that it's basically the same as the bubble. And, if you take a look at a lot of these leagues that are starting up, the only one I think that's really different is baseball. And that is that they're using home cities and it's not a hub or a bubble. Like I look at baseball's plan and I think of all the sports, to me, that's the one that is most, that I think is going to have the biggest trouble succeeding, just because there's lots of travel involved and things like that. The hockey, even though we've used the term hub cities, I think it's very comparable to basketball. I think those two sports have taken a lot of cues from each other. If you take a look at the protocols, which were released on the websites, the League and the Players Association website this week, basically it's a bubble. Once you get to the NHL city, whether it's Edmonton or Toronto, and it's going to be Edmonton for the West and Toronto for the East and Edmonton for the Stanley Cup final and semifinal, you're going to be basically encased. And, in the protocols, it says if you leave without permission, you're basically going to be prevented from playing. You're done. And there's also talk about the team getting fined and potentially losing draft picks if players leave. And even if you do have permission, to go home, say, you've got a reason you have to go home, there's a defined protocol before you can play again. And so, and there's a lot of people getting tested, like not just the players and the coaches and the people around the team, but the people who work in the hotels. I think I'm actually really happy to see that a lot of the ancillary workers, the blue-collar people who are going to be there, that they're going to be able to get tested. So even though we're calling it a hub city, I think it's very similar to the NBA in terms of it being a bubble and a tight bubble. And if you're not someone who's supposed to be there to play or be part of the teams or work, you're not going to be in there.
Speaking with Elliot Friedman. Elliot, I want to follow up on that because I'm glad you bring it up. That's the one concern I had, and I echo your sentiments about, if we're ranking at least the three, baseball, hockey, and basketball. I have the same concerns you do about baseball because of the travel and going in and out of various cities as opposed to staying put in one place. The one concern I had when we were talking so much about Vegas, especially before we ultimately settled on Edmonton and Toronto, at least in Orlando, and I might be naive in saying this, you're in a gated community behind sort of closed doors, and are guys going to try to leave? Are they going to try and venture out? Yeah, the possibility certainly exists. Hopefully not. But there are more things to do, to roam, to go, to explore, to keep your mind fresh, if nothing else, as opposed to just being stuck in your hotel room with little to nothing else to do. I feel like it's a little bit different in Edmonton and Toronto because you are essentially confined to your hotel. You can't be going and wandering down Yonge Street or Dundas or Queen or anywhere else in Toronto and potentially risking exposure. You're going to go arena, hotel, hotel, arena, and that's it. And I just don't know if that's feasible to do so and to keep it as safe as what the NBA in theory has in this gated community.
Well, I think the one thing that if you follow along with Toronto, Toronto redid its bid for hockey. Like initially they were talking about downtown hotels and things like that. And one of the reasons that Toronto was temporarily, I don't know if they were out, but they'd fallen down the rankings is that the league and the players were really concerned about, could they protect the bubble in downtown Toronto? I mean, you guys know the city. It's pretty dense downtown. I think they were worried about that. And so what they did was they came up with a whole new plan where basically it's on the exhibition grounds. And, yes. and as you know, the Raptors practice facility is part of that. And so I think they feel much better in Toronto about they can create things for them to do in that area, lounges and things like that, that will allow them to solve that problem. Now, Edmonton, from what I understand, Edmonton, like in terms of when it really became a serious contender, although they'd really made a big effort, it wasn't until really late that Edmonton jumped to the top of the list. So I think some of that stuff is kind of being worked through. I'm not as familiar, but I do know that, Eric, that creating entertainment when you're not playing is going to be a part of this. Like stuff where you can still stay isolated from everyone else, but stuff to do. They recognize they have to have that. Now, you can't build Disney World, but you can build something. And I think the other thing that's going to help this is that if you are one of the teams that gets to the Final Four, that's when they're going to look at bringing your families with you if you want that.
Mm-hmm. Elliot, it's crazy because, you know, when you talked about the difficulty in protecting yourself, insulating yourself in downtown Toronto, I look at the NBA and they've got Disney. They've got a property. It's a big property. But in hockey-crazed Canada, if the fans find out that, I don't know, Sidney Crosby, you know, Austin Matthews, they find like, well, there's going to be like seven stars here, like seven teams here, like whatever it is. Like, I'm just leery of fans descending upon the area just to try to get a look. I mean, that's, I mean, that was the one thing that I always thought about Vegas. Well, Vegas is a great city, but how do you keep, never mind keep the guys in, how do you keep people away? And that's, I mean, at Disney, at least they've got a property, they've got gates. Not that it may not make it any easier, but how do you do that in a city where you don't have, you know, partitions and confined areas?
Well, I think that's what you're going to see, Jonesy. I think you're going to see them built. You know, one of the things that people have talked about during this entire process is sort of creating like an Olympic Village. And if you've ever covered an Olympics before, you know, you can keep people away. And like it sounds like it's going to be an Olympic Village. Like players are going to have to wear their credential all the time. Never mind players. Everybody in there is going to have to wear their credential all the time. Like even if you're a media member and you're allowed and you go cover this, you're not going to be given FaceTime with the players and the people there. Like they are going to be very restrictive of space. And I think what you're going to see is, you know, fans, maybe there's some places where you can watch a bus go by or something like that, but I have a feeling it's going to be extremely restrictive in terms of, you know, how close you're even going to be able to get to the players. You're not going to have any access to the arenas. You're not going to have any access to their hotels or anything like that. I think you're going to see things built and created where you're really kept much farther than arm's length.
Speaking with Elliot Friedman. Elliot, to get technical here for a second, when we talk about the actual deal announced yesterday, again, all pending ratification, two-part question for you. Is there any way that this deal would have got done in terms of the return to play without an extension of the CBA? Mm-hmm. And further to that, the extension of the CBA, which now includes participation in the 22 and 26 Olympics and all the other kind of nuts and bolts of this deal, it seems like it kind of favors the player, or at least is favorable towards the players. Am I wrong in that assumption? And to go back to the first one, could this have been done without an extension of the CBA?
Well, I think the answer is no, Eric. I really don't think that I just don't think that if they hadn't been able to do a new CBA and extend it and settle a lot of the issues like escrow checks for players, I don't think this would have worked out. I think it all. Now, there are some players who felt that it should be two different votes, one on the CBA and one on the return to play guidelines. The Players Association felt like because they were kind of worked in together, it should be one big vote. But I don't think it would have happened if they didn't get the two things done at once. I'm with you on that. You know, I think the second part. Sorry, Eric. What was the second question?
When it relates to just the return to play overall for the NHL. I think you kind of touched on it, Ellie. I think, honestly, quite honestly, you answered it in terms of just the return to play as it related to whether it could have got done without having the extension of the CBA. And also, if the players kind of went out favorably with this deal that they ultimately signed.
Well, I'll tell you, when I wrote on Friday about what I'd heard was in the deal, I did have a couple of players who reached out and texted and said, this is better than we thought it was going to be. So I think there were some issues that were important to the players, like the Olympics, like a cap on escrow, that they said, okay, we're good with those because those are some of our biggest issues. I think the players that are going to have the biggest issue with it are going to be the guys who are going to be free agents in the next few years. Like, those are the guys. And you know, it's like, you know, I was reading about Siakam's contract and kind of what happens to it. And, you know, he's still going to make a ton of money. But, like, I was like, wow, like, I mean, what a kick that is. And, you know, I think that in the NHL, there's going to be some guys, whether they're unrestricted or restricted free agents over the next few years, it's going to be tight. You know, there's not going to be a ton of teams with cap room. And the other thing is there's going to be some other teams because of what some of these owners' companies have gone through where maybe they're going to have cap room, but are they going to be willing to spend the cash? And I think that those are the guys who are looking at this and saying, boy, we got squeezed here. This is we got hit by the pandemic, and now that's led to a much tighter CBA in terms of flexibility. And those are the guys probably looking at it and saying, wow, that's a tough one for us.
Elliot, can you not look at that in a sense? And it's crazy because you think about how much of the related income is, you know, ticket sales and people in licensed merchandise. You know, go to the arena that night with your family and you know, you buy hats and T-shirts and jerseys and stuff. But do you think that's somewhat of a, for lack of a better term, a market correction? The Stars are going to get paid. We know who the minimal guys are, the minimum guys are, but it's maybe it's the expanding middle class, as you said, where it gets squeezed, and the players might have a hard time with that, but the owners might say, well, hey, this is what it is because of the times that we're in, and not that they're going to make a little less money, but at the same point, it's a little bit of a correction, isn't it?
It is. I mean, the middle class always gets squeezed in these kinds of things. There's no question about that, Jonesy. I think in the NHL too, like there's some, we're going to find out quick because there's some big, there's three pretty good players, for example, who are unrestricted free agents this year. The captain of St. Louis, Pietrangelo, Taylor Hall in Arizona, and Torrey Krug in Boston. And those guys were all going to get big deals, whether they stayed or they went, they were all going to get big deals. And I think everybody's going to be curious now to look at those three guys and see, okay, what do their numbers end up being? That I think is going to tell us is, do even some of the star players get squeezed here? And that's what I think we're all going to wait to see.
Ellie, we appreciate the time today. Thanks for doing this. All the best to the family, and we'll talk soon.
All right, guys, my pleasure. Have a great week.
Okay, Elliot.
There is Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet and, of course, Hockey Night in Canada. We'll take the break, shift our attention back to the NBA when former NBAer Jameer Nelson joins us on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jones on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you, joining us on the line right now, longtime NBA, former NBA All-Star Garden, a man that certainly broke the Raptors' hearts many times over the years as well, Jameer Nelson. Jameer, thanks for the time today.
Hey, how you doing, fellas? Appreciate it.
Yeah, we're doing well, Jameer, doing well. Also, I should note, and we'll plug it again before we go, but host of a new podcast called Court Vision. So we'll make sure that we let folks know, Jameer, where they can tune into that. Earlier today on our station, on another show, Jameer, Quentin Richardson was on, and he and, of course, Darius Miles with the podcast that they've got going right now, talking about the return to play, the bubble down in Orlando. Obviously, you know the area well from your days with the Magic. Jameer, how do you feel that this will or won't work in terms of the success that the NBA is certainly hoping for, keeping the guys safe while trying to get the game and the league back going again?
Well, I think it'll work if guys abide by the rules and what the regulations are. You know, it's tough to get all 300-plus guys to buy into whatever the NBA and Player Association has come up with. But, you know, for the most part, you know, it's going to be trial and error, just like anything else that's going on in this world right now. We don't know how it's going to go. We don't know if it's going to have a positive effect, negative effect. You know, I know for all the basketball heads out there that are extremely happy to play and extremely happy to watch basketball itself, as I'm in the gym right now with my son. Just staying around the game is something that is important to me. But, you know, I was asked multiple times what I've played if would I be in the bubble this year if I was still playing? And I just don't know. It's no right or wrong answer. Like I said a couple seconds ago, it's trial and error with everything right now.
Jameer, you think that trial and error is going to – and you've been big in the Players Association. Do you think it might translate over to the CBA where if it looks like we're going to be going down a certain road with, you know, fewer fans in the stands or fewer ticket sales and a shrinking of BRI, of basketball-related income, that all of a sudden, you know, CBA negotiations change. You know, deals get reopened and – sides are asking for things that they didn't ask for before because of the way the economics are. I know you've been in on those meetings. Do you see some of that potentially cropping up?
Yeah, I do. I do, because owners are going to try to protect themselves and players are going to try to protect themselves. It's only a handful of guys, no matter what would have happened, I think, during the course of this year, if it would have been canceled fully. Like, I think it's Rich Paul guys that would have got all their paycheck worth, like 95% of their check. So guys are going to try to get stuff in their next contract as well as the owners. I mean, they're going to try to put pandemic, stuff in their contract some way, one way or another, when the CBA comes up, as owners and players have to do that as well. So it's going to affect, when you talk about BRI, it's going to affect paychecks for sure, because when you don't have fans, you're going to have people sitting in them seats. They're going to have to find a way to make money by streaming games and from different networks and different situations. I mean, you don't have concessions and stuff like that, but the one thing that we do have is online betting. So I think that's going to be something that people may move to try to create a little more revenue stream for all sports.
I'm just going to say before I ask my next question, Jameer, as a couple of hoop heads on the line, myself and Jonesy, I like just hearing the ball in the background and the squeaking of the shoes. It's making me want that game back even quicker.
We're getting this work in, man. We got to, you know, I have a son that's upcoming sophomore at George Washington University in D.C., so no days off for him right now. We got a gym and we're in here working.
You know what? I'm going to take this in a different direction then for a second. As a former player, but as a father, how have you handled the not just the pandemic, but everything that's been happening in the world right now, socially, politically, everything in terms of trying to be a mentor, a father figure on the court, off the court for your son that I'm sure, like a lot of young men and women right now, confused by the world in terms of the direction that we are heading?
Well, the one thing you have to do as a parent is lead your family. You and your husband and a parent, you lead your family, and you have to learn and you have to teach. And that's one thing I've been trying to do with my kids. I've always tried to learn things and try to get better in my approach with my kids and how to deal with society. Because one thing, as an African-American, I had to tell my kids how I grew up, where I grew up from, and no matter where you grew up at and who your friends are, you're African American, and you're going to look like an African American when you step outside of your house, and people are going to treat you that way. And you just have to know what you are and what you're up against, where you those challenges,
that occur when, you know, because something's going to happen to my kids. Just trying to prepare them for that situation, whether it's getting pulled over by the cops, you know, because I have a son that drives, whether it's being followed in a store. How to react is, you know, African-American, you have to react a little different when those situations occur.
Jameer, do you think that some of the coaches who weren't sensitive to that will become more sensitive, or coaches that, you know, that taught you that kind of stuff? I mean, I think about, you know, where you grew up in Philly, and I know they were a rival, but, you know, the crosstown rival, you know, John Chaney at Temple, and, you know, the way he was a strict disciplinarian. He was a guy that there was a no-nonsense guy. Do you think coaches might kind of look at that a little bit more and start teaching or considering that a bit more in their teachings, in their coachings, in recruiting? You know, are those things that you think coaches will pay more attention to now as we move forward with where we are in society?
Fellas, I lost you for a second. I don't know what happened. I heard somebody else talking in the background. Can you repeat the question, please?
All right. I was talking about where you grew up in Philly, and I know he was a crosstown rival, but Coach Chaney at Temple, he was a no-nonsense guy, and he taught his guys along the same lines the way you're teaching your son around, it's a game, but get your education, you're African-American, all of these things. How much do you think coaches will be more in tune with that, even if they weren't before, because of where we are in society?
Well, I think the most important thing is, like I said, as a coach of any level, you should be teaching these kids how to grow. And, you know, Coach Chaney wasn't my coach, but he was well-respected around the world by all athletes just because of his legacy. And he's a guy, like you said, African-American, and did things in a way where he made sure – African-American players were aware that they were African-American. And some you see certain situations going on in the country with some college coaches. I just read something about Pat Cameron and one of his players. You know, it's unfortunate things that happen and certain things being said to kids where you don't even recognize that Pat Cameron may not have even recognized that he was in the wrong, but he was totally wrong for saying what he said about the kid. I guess he said something like, I don't know all in particulars, so I don't want to speak out of turn, but it had something about a noose. It had something to do with the noose in the sentence that he said to a kid. And you can't say that to an African-American kid. An African-American can't say that to an African-American. So a white American definitely can't say that to an African-American.
Speaking with Jameer Nelson, longtime NBA player, former NBA All-Star as well, spent obviously the bulk of his career with the Orlando Magic. Jameer, when we look back on the floor, and we talked off the top there about, you know, the bubble scenario and the resumption of play, if we can talk just purely basketball for a second and keep our fingers crossed that everybody stays safe and healthy and this plan goes, you know, without a hitch, do you see a team that has a leg up over another? Is there a team or two that you feel enters this resume season with more of a chance, or is this kind of a clean slate, a fresh slate for a lot of teams, especially with no fans, with so much time off, and could this be the one year where we maybe see the potential for more upsets than ever before?
Well, I think we definitely have the opportunity to see more upsets, but when it comes to winning the championship, it's one of three teams that can actually do it, in my opinion, and it's both teams in L.A. and I think Boston. I think Boston in the East has the most depth and young depth, and it's, you know, it's all versatility. All those guys are versatile in their style of play. You got Brown, Tatum, Smart. You got don't forget about Gordon Hayward, and then you got Kemba Walker that I think falls in the category, in my opinion, of a smaller guard, and he gets forgotten about a lot when it comes to being a star. I think he's a star in the league, and I think he's helped carry that team to where they are or what they did this year. But it's one of three teams, in my opinion, and nobody's going to have, and I don't think anybody's going to have an upper hand because everybody's in that same situation. But out in L.A., you got three of the best players in the world, in LeBron, AD on the same team, and then you got Kawhi. So those three guys right there, I think will just them alone will help their team advance past certain teams in the playoffs. But, you know, both of those teams had a great or has done a great job of putting pieces around their star players.
Jameer, I'm going to ask you about Toronto because there's a guy who's leading Toronto who's a Philly kid like you. And his play, his will to win, his energy rubs off on other people and makes them better. And yep. Where do you value championship experience with a guy like Lowry, who's a leader, and the entire Raptor team? You know, there's another guy who's cutting your image on that team, Fred VanVleet, undersized. Yep. People, you know, probably sold him short the same way they – I remember when you were coming out in the draft and Eric and I were on the show, I said, I'd draft the point guard. I'd take Nelson if he was there. But I look at Toronto, and they've got guys cut in that same image, and I wonder what kind of chance you would give them when this all gets going.
Well, it's not that I'm you know, discrediting any other team, especially not the Raptors after the year they had last year. But I'm just going with my picks, and those are my three picks. Just looking at the talent level of those three teams, I think they have the best chances. In Toronto, like you said, they have a bunch of guys who, and it's important in the NBA when you're building culture. They have a bunch of guys who are extremely happy to be where they are and extremely happy to be in their role. And in other people's eyes, they overachieve. I never look at like a guy like Kyle as an overachiever. I look at him doing exactly what he's supposed to do. VanVleet as well. I think, you know, being a smaller guard, being in that same situation, I know exactly what he went through coming into the league and, you know, trying to keep his foot and put his stamp on the league. And he's done a great job, both of those guys. Kyle is one of my favorite players just because we kind of, while he was in college, we kind of hooked up for a few years and we put a lot of work in the gym together.
Speaking with Jameer Nelson. Jameer, you know, you're in a gym right now. I assume it's a damn near empty gym. When it comes to playing games.
Me and myself.
Yeah, good. But when it comes to playing games, how much do you think that's going to impact these guys? You know, they're going to be playing in front of some NBA personnel. There's going to be some players that are in the stands that don't feel like sitting in their hotel rooms. But, you know, we're talking about playing in front of, you know, 50 or 100 or a couple of hundred at most versus, you know, 5, 10, 20, 25,000 people. Does that matter, or does it just come down to going back to the grassroots when you were a kid, whether it be in a gym or playing somewhere out on the street somewhere where it didn't matter that there were no fans? It was the ball goes up and I want to win. Is that ultimately what's going to kick in for a lot of guys?
Absolutely. We can't have it no other way. So that's exactly how guys have to think about it. It's me and my team versus the other team, and that's it. Nobody has a home court advantage. Nobody obviously can feed off the crowd. So it's going to just be – it's going to come down to just straight basketball. And that's good. That's good to see. And, you know, unfortunately, you would like to have fans or anything like that. But it's an opportunity for guys to really, one, express themselves, but two, put themselves on a bigger platform when it comes to the social injustice and police brutality. That's one reason why I'm happy that basketball's back. But, you know, it is scary with the pandemic and the virus going on. So, like I said, it's trial and error with all this stuff. But ultimately, I don't think it's going to affect too many guys. I think they'll just play. And because when you're practicing, nobody's watching. And not saying practice is the same as the game, but guys are going hard. So I think guys will figure out how to play and how to kick it in gear when that time comes.
Hey, Jameer, have you started to notice any tangible differences, you know, in little things in society? I know that we've got people asking more questions, people wanting to learn. You know, a lot of the older heads that we've talked to, you know, people like Wayne Embry, Dominique Wilkins, I mean, they've been encouraged by the diversity in the protesters. Are you seeing any of that? Are you seeing this thing heading in the right direction? Are you seeing it losing momentum? What tangible gains or retreats are you seeing with society right now?
Well, I think it's the most important thing that happened is the protests and the conversations that have been had so far. We just have to continue to piggyback off of that as a country and move forward and figure out what's the next plan. Because you don't, you know, something that, like I said, the protests and and everything that's happened has been so good. You don't want that to, you know, die on a vine. We have to continue to do things to stick together and to put together a plan so everybody is treated equal. I mean, you know, we always say equality. How do we get to that? And you know, and it comes from the top. It comes from the top and starts there. And just like a basketball team, you know, you guys have Masai there in Toronto. It starts from the top, and he did a great job last year of putting the right pieces around Kawhi, Ty, and Siakam, and you guys won a championship.
Jameer, we appreciate the time today, and I want to make sure again to let folks know to check out Jameer's new podcast called Court Vision. So we'll be sure to put that on our list. Jameer, thanks for the time and the insight, and stay safe and healthy. All the best to your family.
Thanks, fellas. You too.
All right, take care, Jameer.
There is Jameer Nelson, longtime NBA player. The bulk of his career spent with the Orlando Magic, former All-Star as well. What's up, Jonesy?
You remember that? I remember you and I standing, doing the post game at Lord Stanley's Mug, one of those years when the Raptors were just hemorrhaging in terms of losses. And we started talking about the draft. And
I do.
And we were talking about who we would take. And I think both of us said, hey, good guard play always keeps you in games. At that point, it didn't always win games the way it is now. But, you know, we had, if we'd have been GMs, and I don't think it would have been a bad pick, we'd have both taken Jameer Nelson.
Yeah, you could have done far worse than having a guy like Jameer Nelson and what he brought to the floor, Jones. And it's funny to see, as you kind of brought up, you know, how things have sort of come full circle in the NBA, where, you know, it used to maybe be, I don't know if it's fair to say frowned upon, but certainly people were shying away from the smaller guard. And now look at size not mattering at any position at this point in today's NBA. And Jameer Nelson, you know, he's just recently retired, but I got to imagine he would flourish even more in today's NBA. We are late for the break.
Yeah.
Way late for the break, Jonesy. So we'll step aside and get set to wrap things up on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Writer's Block is coming up next. And Jonesy, another show has flown by. We're back again tomorrow. But fingers crossed that we are back again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. There are not more positive case, whether it be in baseball, hockey, or otherwise basketball, because it seems like every time we turn on the station or turn the channel, there's another positive test coming and making things tougher, no doubt, in terms of return to play.
It will, Eric, and guys have to be careful. They have to be safe. You can't get cavalier. And just because things are opening up and, you know, you're kind of getting back to normal, you can't let your guard down right now. You can't if you're an athlete.
Thanks to Elliot Friedman, Jameer Nelson, our crew, and all of you. For Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. Thanks for tuning in to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.